Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
Hi, I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I am Mike Lupica of MLB.com and MSNBC, and welcome to the Thursday edition of the Sports Reporters podcast. We now come to you on Mondays and Thursdays. We are beginning what we anticipate and hope will be a long run with Compass. Guys, let me just tell you something. I am just back from New York City. I had to do some television work for MSNBC, and I was out and about yesterday. I was in a restaurant. I was walking down the street. I was hanging around NBC. And let me just say that the mood is not good in the big bad city about the trade of Odell Beckham Jr. to the Cleveland Browns. I cannot remember the last time people saw me on the street yesterday. It's all they wanted to talk about.
Mike, just remember, we didn't sign him to trade him.
Oh,
how about is that going to be how much that defines Gettleman now, right, in New York?
Everybody is saying, Mitch, and everybody's writing, what changed in a couple of weeks? If you didn't sign him to trade him, what the hell did he do to get himself traded?
So tell me how, I'm so glad we're doing this because I really wanted to hear the New York thing. I'm glad you're there. So now I see in some of the New York reports, Sports Illustrated picked this up too, some anonymous person saying he became too much of a pain in the ass to continue to deal with. So how much, if any, veracity is attached to that, and which part of the pain in the ass has become too much?
What other possible reason could there be for any of this?
He didn't do something recently.
He's not unproductive.
He's got a rap sheet being a pain in the ass. But I mean, did something happen that I missed?
No. And you are seeing it in SI and various New York City publications today. The Giants have done a good job of getting their story out. And the story, they resurrected a quote where Gettleman didn't say he was talking about Beckham, and where he talked about teams that have the a-hole content, okay? And then there's, now I'm seeing this thing, and this is coming from guys who write about this team, whom I respect, okay? Well, a great wide receiver doesn't take you to the Super Bowl. And I'm thinking, well, not exactly. And how many great running backs, since you drafted Saquon Barkley, take you to the Super Bowl? But what you're getting is this was the cumulative effect. But what you guys are asking the proper question. If you're, why did you sign him to an extension? If this was your long range plan, and now we're hearing, well, they're pissed that he was slow recovering from this quad injury at the end of the year. And now you're saying, well, look how many points they scored in games that he didn't play. But the fact is, what they got for him, you could get that anytime. Okay. It's not even a high first round pick. Guys, does this play into what we've been talking about with wide receivers? They're all divas, okay? They're not all Jerry Rice.
It plays into something that is even bigger than that, Mike, because Le'Veon Bell is included into it as a running back. This whole thing about we're not putting up with that kind of behavior is the dominant theme in this free agency season, is it not? I mean, here we have Le'Veon Bell, who literally pouted his way off of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and his teammate Antonio Brown, who basically mouthed his way off of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Odell Beckham Jr., who everybody, no matter what you think of his shenanigans, and he has had plenty of shenanigans, is a fantastic talent and become too much of an asshole to deal with. And so now it becomes, instead of, the one man's ceiling is another man's floor, now it's going to be one man's asshole is another man's savior. But isn't it interesting that suddenly behavior, right, coming off of the whole situation of kneeling and who's going to kneel and who's going to take a knee and Colin Kaepernick, Isn't it interesting how behavior has suddenly supplanted talent?
The level of talent that these two particular people that we're talking about.
Three particular. Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr., and Le'Veon Bell. There's three of the most talented players in the league.
Right, period. Absolutely. And the thing is, two of them involve the same team, which is another story. You know, what's going on? We have touched upon this previously, and we will continue to touch upon it as we watch the evolution of the Steelers or the devolution of the Steelers from a team of respect and admirable qualities to, a mess, a dysfunctional family thing. That's what makes this thing even more interesting, is that two of these guys came from the same team and of all teams. So,
And Mitch, here's the thing about Dave Gettleman, who is a football lifer. He did good work in Carolina until they didn't like him very much. You see some of the comments that come from Carolina players, and it's like, we told you this was going to happen. And they thought they were getting another Ernie Accorsi. But there's only one Ernie Accorsi. There's very few football men that I have met in my life like Ernie Accorsi, who waited under George Young and then made the Eli Manning trade, which is one of the most significant trades in the history of New York sports. So they got tired of Jerry Reese, and now they bring in Dave Gettleman. Okay, guy, a 60-something general manager, kind of tough talk and all that stuff. He is on the clock now. I mean, and now you're hearing, oh, well, he knew he had to blow up this roster. Well, if he was going to blow up the roster, what the hell is he doing with a 38-year-old quarterback last year looks like they're going to take into the next season? So how do you help him? By taking away one of the best receivers in the sport? And, Mitch, I'll ask you this. They acted like, oh, they wouldn't have made the trade if they couldn't have got Jabril Peppers. Okay.
Yeah, really? I saw that. If we don't get the safety, we're not making the trade.
Maybe they thought they were getting Julius.
I love Jabril Peppers at Michigan. He was a phenomenal college player. He's one of those examples of college players who can be fantastic in college and just okay in the pros. It's just a different game, and he was playing for a different style team. The story about this is a number 17 first round draft pick. It would be one thing if you're getting number 4 and you say, okay, we're going to trade an all pro receiver in his prime. It's not like Odell Beckham's 32. We're going to trade him, but we're getting a number 4 pick in the draft, and we're going to draft a guy with that same kind of potential. You traded for number 17. I don't care about that third round pick. I know they do, Bob. This is your pet peeve. We got a third rounder too, Remember, that third rounder could turn into somebody, Okay, forget it. I'm not playing that stupid game. But number 17 for this kind of a talent, and how much dead money are they carrying on this? How much is this going to hurt them in terms of what they've already given away?
Well, no, it does hurt them, not to a catastrophic effect, but here, Mitch, here's the thing. You're touching on it, okay? Unless they've got a way to take their 6 and this 17 and say, I don't know why the Jets would want to help them, and move up to make sure they get Dwayne Haskins. Or maybe they're stockpiling picks because they're going to try to trade for Josh Rosen. That's another thing you're reading today in New York. Oh, how sweet they were on Josh Rosen last time around. I'm thinking, I must have missed those stories.
Last I heard, Josh Rosen's going to take like a third round pick to get. Nobody's giving away a first round pick for Josh Rosen.
No, and all of a sudden, he's their heart's desire. When you look at this deal, you're 100% right. Your first reaction is you were thinking with old-time Browns thinking, oh, yeah, Browns must be a high pick. Oh, wait, no, the Browns were way better than the Giants last year. And guess, by the way, guys, guess who woke up whistling yesterday? Baker Mayfield.
Oh, my God.
Oh, of course.
I have to say, living just up the road from Cleveland. Cleveland for so many years was the one thing that Detroit Lions fans could look south for and say, we're not Cleveland.
We're not as bad as the Browns.
although we went 0-16 first. Now they have slapped together very quickly a beautiful little team of first round picks that they have had year after year for being terrible. A quarterback who is now going to come into his prime. Quarterbacks make that biggest jump in that second year when they're in the NFL. He's going to have Odell Beckham to throw to. And, man, they just got legitimately good. Remember, they got some good defensive players. They have all those number one picks that are starting to come into their own. You have to actually now say the Browns have a bigger upside here than the Giants do with Eli Manning. And Mike, I'm glad you brought that up, because it seems to me that so much of what is happening in New York, whether they don't take a quarterback, getting rid of Beckham, whatever, all kind of goes through the spoke of Eli Manning still being their quarterback. If they had taken a different approach, if they had started with another, if they had drafted a quarterback last year instead of what, I think all these other dominoes would have gone differently. But so much of it seems to keep going back to their stubbornness on saying, no, another year with him, another year with him. Because wasn't Beckham's criticism about him and the offense effectively? I mean, isn't that one of the things that got him run out of town?
Yep.
Hey, before we go on, guys, let me say this about Hair Club, our sponsor. You know, your confidence is important, and sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of their Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Hair Club is a leader in total hair solutions with a legacy of success for over 40 years. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. You can see for yourself just how powerful great hair can be. Hey, we get it. Your hair is visibly thinning, and if you see it, you know others see it too. So get your confidence back. And the first step is to check out Hair Club. Here's how you can do that. Go to hairclub.com/hoops today for a free hair health and scalp analysis for new customers. And you can enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. That's hairclub.com/hoops for a free hair health and scalp analysis and enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. Hairclub.com/hoops. Experience your hair and your life at its best. Only with Hair Club. We're sure you're going to love the club.
Mitch, you're 100% right. Again, you're reading the same stuff today that we're all reading. And that's another thing. They didn't like, you know, they've been mad at him since he went on the boat before the playoff game with the Packers. They've been mad at him about a Paris video. Okay, but again, who put a gun to their heads and made them sign him to a $90 million or whatever it was contract? Nobody did. You keep coming back to this question. If the weight and the accumulation of all this crap was what did it, what was the last thing that did it? What was the Mrs. O'Leary's cow here of this thing? Because I'll be damned if I know what it is. You think about this, okay? LeBron leaves. And now, all of a sudden, not only are the Browns an ascended team, you think Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, all of a sudden Cleveland's thinking, you know what? We don't all have to leave town now. There's another team coming down the road, and the Browns are more likely to win a Super Bowl before the Giants do.
And let's remember what this means in the city of Cleveland, where football is the most important issue. It's not baseball. It's not basketball. As much as the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers, they binded a wound. You know, it was all about the fact that they hadn't had a championship in that city since 1964, unless you count the WHA, that was all about that. And so it was fine. And they embraced it. And LeBron, it was a nice story because LeBron was quasi-local from Akron and all that. It ain't football. It's Cleveland where football still matters. And this is why this season, I can imagine, is going to be looking forward. They are looking forward to this season. Don't you think they wish this season started at 2 o'clock this afternoon? They are so ready and anxious to see football now and pro football in Cleveland with what's happening. Mitch, and by the way, one more thing, guys. Look at their division. It's falling apart around them. I mean, it's just being set up for them to win that division.
Mitch, who knew? The great thing about sports is, remember a year ago, Baker's too short. Remember that? That was the narrative. Baker's too short. And it took one season for him to become not as dynamic as Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, Mahomes was the most valuable player of the sport running away last year. But he became one of the most dynamic players in a sport where all of a sudden we had young quarterbacks that we wanted to watch again. Okay. After Brady. Now we had all these guys. But again, think of the dynamic now of the Browns. It wasn't so long ago that they were 1-31 over 2 years, okay? And now they've got, not only do they have an exciting quarterback, they have one of the most exciting wide receivers to come into the sport in years. Nothing against Antonio Brown, who's got unbelievable numbers, but Beckham is a star.
Baker Mayfield at quarterback, who's going to get better. Odell Beckham on one side to throw to. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt eventually running the football. Duke Johnson as well. I mean, they got a good tight end. They are well stacked of young talent on that team that's only going to improve, better than all but maybe three or four teams in the NFL that I can think of off the top of my head. That's not a, okay, well, we're pie in the skying it because everyone wants to see Cleveland finally bounce back. That's real talent. Baker Mayfield's real talent. Nick Chubb is real talent. Kareem Hunt, we all know about him. We forget his behavior. Talent-wise, there's not a lot of question about that, or you weren't watching football last year before everything hit the fan. And now Odell Beckham on the other side. They look like they know what they're doing. And the Giants, I guess, Mike, it's going to kind of come down to draft day. You know, maybe they win everybody back with some kind of maneuver with that 6-17 pick and that ever valuable third round pick, which of course is going to turn everything around for them. But until draft day comes, they're really going to look stupid here, you know, and they're going to look like they're wasting another year of Saquon Barkley while they're transitioning.
Mitch, I'm glad you brought him up because that's the other thing you're hearing now. Well, it's just going to be a lot of Saquon Barkley. Oh, okay. Yeah. So he's going to get the crap beat out of him because he becomes their, not only their primary offensive weapon, he becomes their three most primary offensive weapons. And again and again and again. If the New York Jets turn out to have a star in the making in Sam Darnold, which I believe they are, and it's so funny, Mitch and Bob, a Jets fan friend of mine who's really funny, sent me an email yesterday, and he says, is Dave Gettleman trying to play himself into the Jets ring of honor? Because, you know, but now all of it, you look at the Jets, you tell me which one of the New Jersey teams you'd rather be looking at next year. The Jets with Darnold and Le'Veon Bell, or the Giants with Eli Manning, who's on his way to the AARP. They got a running back. Well, yeah, okay. You tell me. I always ask this question. How many running backs have run their teams to the Super Bowl? I was using this analogy with a Giants fan I ran into in a restaurant last night. Barry Sanders didn't sniff a Super Bowl, Mitch. I mean, nobody knows this better than you, and nobody was better than him. Nobody was better than him, okay? Yep. And the idea that you're going to take a running back and he's going to run you all the way to the Lombardi Trophy is insane.
Well, you brought up Le'Veon Bell. I want to ask you about that, too. Now, the Jets gave him $52.5 million over 4 years. The story on this, to me, first of all, is that Le'Veon Bell ended up settling for a contract that averages about $13 million a year while walking away from a year that he could have guaranteed had 14.5, or walking away from an earlier offer from the Steelers that would have given him far more money than what he signed, a $70 million 5-year deal. Now, I understand, because you can't talk contracts without getting into some of the weeds, that the money wasn't guaranteed on that $70 million deal. Pittsburgh doesn't do that, and that was his big thing. I want to know that the money's in my pocket. And the Jets have basically guaranteed $35 million of their 52, and that's in his pocket, and he wouldn't have had that much. But still,
what would have been the Steelers guarantee?
The Steelers guarantee would have been somewhere in the neighborhood of about 20, I think, by the time you added the stuff up. So he does have more money guaranteed in his pocket, and if you're playing against injury and the durability of running backs and all that, I guess I get it. But in the end, he gives away a year of football at age 26, gives away a year of football, makes nothing, to then come back and actually take $1 million less than he could have played for last year. Yeah. And who knows, maybe if he's there, Pittsburgh doesn't crap out the way that they did at the end of the year. I don't know. I know that, in New York, the bigger story is he's just joined the Jets, but we have to talk a little bit about what he ended up settling for. Was this power play by him a failure or success?
Mitch, you touched on it, okay? And I think you guys have heard me over the years quote this line before. And Bob, this involves one of the legendary Patriots, John Hanna, okay, who had a very long holdout at one point in his career. And Bud Collins, God rest his soul, wrote a column for the Boston Globe and asked John Hanna the following question. How are you going to get these Sundays back? And Mitch, when you add it up, okay, and you know how short the primes of running backs are, that he gave away a year of his prime and talent and youth for this difference in money. Do I think it's worth it? No. I think he's going to be a star for the Jets, and the Jets might become an ascended team now, and he'll be a part of that. But was it worth it? Boy, I'll tell you what. I would like to give him truth serum and have him answer that question.
Well, it's the only good thing about it is that he saved a year of wear and tear. But as you just said, he's cost himself a year in his prime. Whether that'll equal out that year with saving your work will give him another year at the other end of it is the only thing. But no, I think I'm put me down as a no. Put me down as a it was a foolish and costly decision on his part. I think he's a loser here. Yes, in that regard. Now the Jets, you know, see how the Jets thing plays out and all that. But the fact is that I think he made a miscalculation.
If somebody did an interesting mathematical thing, they said if you count this year as part of his deal, which you can kind of argue it is because he jockeyed his way out, so he got nothing for this year. So instead of it being a four-year $52 million deal, it's technically, if you take away the money he could have made this year, it's a four-year $38 million deal. So now he's not even making $10 million a year.
Yep.
Over the 4 years that he was there. And that makes him, you know, way back behind Todd Gurley and some of these other guys who were making money. So now let's talk about him being with the Jets. Okay, money aside, contract aside. How much, Mike, do you think this improves the Jets with a coming quarterback in Darnold?
Oh, a lot. A lot. When you add, again, you're adding, it's like the Browns. They're adding one of the best players in the sport. The Jets are adding one of the best players in a sport. And you know, and they've been able to run the ball a little bit, but not like this guy can run the ball. And for Darnold to know he can hand the ball off and make defenses not just respect his running game, but fear his running game. Again, you know, you guys know, I'm going to die on this hill. I think Sam Darnold's going to be a football star. And I think the Giants are going to regret that they didn't draft him when they had the chance. But I'm telling you, Le'Veon Bell, the moves they're making, the Jets are in play again. And, oh, my God, I mean, Mitch and Bob, they are the other team to the max. Okay, you know how there's other teams in sports. The Mets are the other team to the Yankees. The Angels are the other team to the Dodgers. You know that there are people who perpetually fall into the Nets are always going to be the other team in New York basketball, as bad as the Knicks are. This is a chance. This is a chance for the Jets to become the most dynamic and watchable team at MetLife Stadium.
No question.
And I want to go back to the guys. I grew up a Giants fan in upstate New York. I've followed the Giants and been passionate about them my whole life. And you both know this. This, to me, is how quickly you can end up in a ditch in sports. Look at where they were, 7 years ago, whatever it was, they won the second Super Bowl against the Patriots. Yep. But at that point, they had completely altered the Patriots' Super Bowl history by taking these two Super Bowls. And now since then, they've got their second general manager. They have, the Coughlin left. Ben McAdoo got them to the playoffs one time. They flamed out against the Packers. Now they've got Pat Shurmur. And a lot of Giants fans aren't just looking at Mitch. They're not just looking at Gettleman. And they say, well, wait a minute. Pat Shurmur was the end of the star search? And this is how fast you can turn into the Knicks in sports.
Can I ask, are they definitely, if either Murray or Haskins is there, going to use that pick on a quarterback?
Unless they can make a trade for Josh Rosen. You hear about the kid from Duke and everything.
But they're going to use that for a quarter. They're taking a quarterback
imagine.
One way or another.
The question is, when you look at the teams ahead of them, do you think the Bucs would take a quarterback? Okay. Do they have to, if they love Haskins, but I don't know if they love Haskins or not. Okay. But if Kyler Murray comes off the board right away with the Cardinals, Mitch, I just have to believe that then the Giants' option becomes Josh Rosen or Dwayne Haskins, and then you got to decide which guy graded out better.
Hmm. Well, whatever the case is, if they draft a quarterback or trade or however it is, they're going to basically give this year away. Unless they're expecting some kind of Phoenix-like rising for Eli Manning, who at best is going to be serviceable the way Eli Manning has been in the last few years, which hasn't been exceptional, or he's going to continue to diminish, and then they're going to either have to rush a rookie quarterback out there or play a backup or whatever. So, again, another year of Barkley wasted, another year that you don't have Beckham as your guy. Now you're basically looking at 2020 before you're starting to come. And then if that's the first year for your new rookie quarterback, well, there's always bumps in the road. So now that's two more years on Barkley and two more years that you didn't have Beckham. So, yeah, they're a bit of a mess. And, you know, you're right. It doesn't take long to fall. Another example of that, I'm going to do a parting shot on the quarterback that exited, but look at the Jacksonville Jaguars over the last 5 years, from when they drafted Blake Bortles
yep.
to now that they have just unceremoniously dumped him and replaced him with Nick Foles, who apparently is the only place that Nick Foles could go and the only place that the money was there. Now they have to start the Nick Foles era over again. I mean, they were a whisker away from getting to a Super Bowl, and then they tumbled all the way backwards. So you're very right, Mike. It's a precarious thing,
man,
at the top.
Mitch, it just shows you. We always, one of the things we all love about sports, I mean, Mitch and Bob and I have talked about this forever, it's how the, big stories are so, they change in the moment, in the blink of an eye, and then they become one of the biggest stories of all time. But man, oh man, when you get sideways, and Mitch and Bob, you know where the Giants are right now? They're in the worst place you can be in sports, where your only plan is to get to your next plan. That you just, you never want to be there.
Well, this thing about Eli is fascinating, and as an outsider, I look at it and shake my head at why they can't see. Mike, let me ask you a question. Where would you rank him? Where does he rank? Is he even in the middle of the pack right now at this stage of his career?
Of quarterbacks? No, at this stage of his career, no. Now, a more interesting debate, and it's not for today, is whether you think he belongs in the Hall of Fame and whether those two Super Bowls are going to put him in the Hall of Fame.
Because
he has numbers. He has an odd playoff resume. Mitch, you know this about Eli, right? He won the two Super Bowls and never won another playoff game in his life. Remarkable
which is kind of how from afar I watch his games, like crappy game. Oh my God, look at that game. Look at that pass. Crappy game. Oh my God, look at that game. He's an all or nothing. And of course, in the NFL, if you can, there are, a short list of quarterbacks who had one season and won a Super Bowl and never really were heard from on a big name again. But when you get two, you move into rare company. History just demands it, and you're absolutely right. He's a conundrum. But that's for another time. By the way, did you see the comments that Antonio Brown made when he got to when he got to Oakland?
Yeah,
all about accountability.
That's it, baby. Accountability.
I'm going to make sure that things are accountable here. I'm going to make sure, because I'm all about accountability to the team. I'm all about, you got to be there. No being late. He actually said no being late. No getting fined. I'm thinking, did these guys even listen to themselves? Did they read their own material? When you're literally saying that you're all about accountability and you just forced your way off a team after walking out on it, after not playing when they absolutely needed you, and you got the audacity to make those kind of comments? Do you think that Oakland is in another country than Pittsburgh? That we don't speak the same language there? And it's like, oh, they'll never hear this because, I'm just going to say it in Oakland. Then this will never find its way back to Pittsburgh. Quote, I bring accountability. I bring action. Not what I say, what I do, how I approach things. Holding guys accountable in the receiving room, developing a pot, challenging guys. If you drop a ball, we're going to have a pot. A pot. I assume he means a pot of money and not medicinal marijuana.
Yeah, sure,
just
Chris,
super
sure.
Accountability. This guy is the poster man now for super accountability.
Hey,
it's
Bob,
just incredible.
What position did he play, Mitch? What position does he play?
I know, Diva.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
hey,
thank you.
Bob,
yes.
You know what just happened with our dear friend, Mitch? He turned into Jim Mora. It wasn't practice. It wasn't playoffs. No.
Really?
Well, excuse me, it wasn't Allen Iverson talking about practice. It wasn't Mora talking about playoffs. You're talking accountability?
Yeah. No, it's an utterly incongruous. It is, but
that
not
was
shocking,
a great speech,
but not shocking.
It's like, you know what I felt like watching that, Mitch? I was looking over my shoulder saying, I'm sorry, are you talking to me? Are you you are Antonio Brown, right? And you're talking about accountability. Oh yeah, okay, got it.
Lastly, before we move on from football to the NBA, I just typed in, you know, biggest winners and losers in the NFL draft to see how the national media is, because it occurred to me before we started the show, you know what? I've heard a lot about the Browns, heard a lot about Oakland, yeah, heard a lot about the Jets, and I haven't heard a damn thing about the New England Patriots. And of course, they're the reigning champions. So curious. I just kind of typed in Patriots and free agency, and they're coming up on all kinds of people's lists as one of the big winners in free agency because they didn't sign anybody or they let guys get away. Now, of course, being in Detroit, where one of the guys that they let get away came right to our roster, and we are, of course, New England West. You know, we have more expats.
I saw
now.
Your column. That was a great column, Mitch.
We have
that
more expats
really
than the Cayman Islands. That's my new line here. And Trey Flowers is a 25, going to be 26-year-old defensive end. And here in Detroit, it's like, yes, he's the answer to our prayers. We stole a guy from the Patriots. And in New England, apparently, Bob, it's like, yes, we don't have to pay him the big money. We're the big winners because we let him go. So who's right?
Mitch, the headline on Ben Volen's column, what you just said, the headline on Ben Volen, who's a terrific football columnist for the Boston Globe, is Trey Flowers got overpaid and other early free agency observations.
Oh, no, it's true. I mean, this is the ML. An MO, you talk about consistency. You talk about, I mean, this is the Bill Belichick MO, and nothing's changed. And they make a value judgment, a cost efficiency based, and that's the way he lives. And he decided, they knew that this that young Flowers was going to be the best available pass rusher. Therefore, he was going to have an overinflated value in the, you know, as we, one of the lessons that we need to be keep reminded, we get reminded of every year in every sport, who gets paid what is very dependent on circumstance and in time. And you if you come out at the right time with the right position in the right sport, you get paid more than you would have if you came out at a different time in that sport and that year. And this year he was the lucky beneficiary of a dearth of available pass rushers. He's
hey,
good,
Mitch,
and but
Mitch,
he's not that
you know
good.
What Mitch, you made this point not long ago, okay, and it's how important it can be to win early in a quarterback's career. Okay, why can the Browns spend this kind of money? And I'm quoting from Ben Volen's column about free agency today. This sounds exactly like what you were talking about a week ago, Mitch. They have Baker Mayfield on a cheap rookie contract. Okay,
yep.
So this is the time for the Browns to get him while the getting's good.
Yeah. Well, we could spend forever talking about the art of manipulating the salary cap.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean about, you know, how to hide money or how to defer money. I mean about when to take players in.
You're
their
not talking
careers.
Like Paul Manafort hiding money. You're
no,
talking
no,
about just legal.
I don't understand.
Money,
that's beyond
right?
Okay. Me. But the stuff that, you know, when to sort of strike in a player's, you know, development and his contract years. And that's absolutely right. If you've got a player who is quickly ascending, and of course it's best if it's a quarterback.
Yep.
But if you have a player who's quickly ascending and is still on a 3-year rookie deal, that's the most precious gold in the NFL
yep.
right now, because not only does he do the job for you, he allows you to add other players.
You talk
to the
about
team.
It all the time, Mitch, and you're 100% right, because when you're locked into these $30 million a year quarterback contracts, right. You don't have that flexibility.
That's right.
Who's the quarterback in Detroit, Mitch? Oh, he doesn't get any money, does he?
Moving on.
No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct. Nobody does. But make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system. All with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
to the NBA.
Last night, we had,
you know, just when you think you're ready to bury the Golden State Warriors, Kevin Durant injured, isn't there. The game's in Houston. Houston's won 9 in a row. Harden and Paul, and they're all ready to go. And what happens? Golden State goes in there and not only wins the game, but gets DeMarcus Cousins to play maybe his best game of the year and makes a lot of people start thinking, holy cow, if this guy plays like this in the postseason, I think it was D'Antoni, the coach of Houston, who said everybody's going to be in trouble. So, you know, I've said it before, count out the Warriors at your own risk, but that was more than just a game in the NBA season.
No, that's what I mean. About every week or so, or maybe every 10 days, or even every 2 weeks, there is a statement game still in the regular season, and they were shouting last night because, Mitch, you're right, because they were shorthanded. And what D'Antoni said is what we all thought last night. Holy crap, if Boogie Cousins is going to play like this in May and June, then the whole world's in a world of trouble.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's why they could, and they shifted their emphasis on how they were going to play offense last night without Durant. They went in and they pounded it in. It was 1986. It was 1956, for God's sake, all over. No, seriously, this is the way, and it warmed my heart because I want balance back in basketball. I hate this idea that the big man is obsolete, and he just went in and he kicked some ass. He was a low post ass kicker of the old-fashioned variety last night. It's still a way you can play basketball. And you know, that Harden was 2 for 12 on threes last night. And let's remember, this is the team that when we last saw them last year was missing 27 consecutive threes in a pivotal game. And this, the three-point mania that has engulfed this team, you know, it's still live by the sword, die by the sword in many in many cases. Hey. And here's Golden State, the most noted proficient team with it. But they got 81 points out of three guys last night, and 27 of them came from a guy who was taking shots from 2 feet from the basket. Yeah.
And Mitch, I've got the box score in front of us. Not only did they get 81 points out of three guys, when was the last time a team went on the road and won a big game against a quality opponent? They were the only three players in double figures. It's a crazy box score. They had three guys in double figures last night.
But see, what you said, Bob, is true. But the adjunct to that is, yeah, Golden State is the most proficient, crazy three-point shooting team. But when they need a different way to win a game, they have one. Houston doesn't. That's they're going to win or lose in the approach that they have. Yeah. James Harden firing away all game long. When he doesn't fire, he's still got the ball in his hand, and then he drives and maybe he alley-oops to somebody or else. That's still basically a James Harden play. But that's the only way they play. Whereas Golden State will give you a game here and a game there in the playoffs that it's like, wow. They didn't do it with 3-point shooting, or Boogie Cousins did it, or Draymond Green actually had a huge game or something. That's what you need. You can't just bring a one approach to trying to win. Even if, you know, in the old days when the Pistons just tried to defense their way to a championship, they couldn't do that either. You know, they ultimately needed to add some offense. So that's why I don't think Houston's winning this thing.
They're not
as good
winning,
as they
Mitch.
Are.
They aren't. Listen, we can play. Tyler can play this back in the playoffs. Okay, they are never going to beat the Warriors when the money's on the table. Never, never, never. In addition to only having three guys in double figures last night, you know how many points Draymond scored? Two.
Took
five assists,
shots.
Five rebounds, 2 points, and it didn't matter. He had a minus four when he was out there. It didn't matter. That's how deep they are. That's how deep they are, and why I will always believe, as great as Kevin Durant is, Steph Curry is still the indispensable member of that team.
Well, it was the Cousins thing was sent a little shockwave throughout the league, I think, frankly, and that he played that game. That's the game they've been waiting for to see what would.
27 points, 32 minutes, Bobby, 11 for 16, eight rebounds, seven assists, two steals. I mean, come on.
Yeah, seven assists. That's another one, too. So, as a matter of fact, he was their assist leader. Now, that's one you could have gotten some
heavy
money on before
the game. He has a remarkable skill set. He's a freakishly good athlete. He can stand outside and shoot threes. He loves to put the ball on the floor and drive. He really does have a freakish skill set.
But that was a very interesting game, no question. But but it just reminds you. But you know, the NBA, the one game on one night, you never truly some of the most improbable things happened. You mentioned it was in Houston. Houston won in 9 straight. They didn't have Durant and all. But I've seen it just too many times that when you see that things are stacked and you think it's stacked a certain way in this league, and you get the just a completely opposite result.
And by the way, in case anybody's asking why I have not jumped on the Pistons bandwagon. Witnessed the last two games that they have played.
Yeah. The bump of the road.
You know, they had a chance to go into Brooklyn and do something significant because they, you know, the Brooklyn and them are vying for the same playoff spot. Okay, yeah. They get trounced. I mean, trounced.
75 points.
But all right, you know, they were coming off a back-to-back and three games in 4 days. Okay. Then they go down to play Miami in a game that also matters because Miami is trailing them right behind them. All right, you figure, all right, we got our tails waxed the other night. We're going to come out. We have a day off. We're going to come out with some energy. What do? They score 8 points in the third quarter, 25 points in the second half, according to reports around here, and I'm not bothering to look it up because it's not worth the effort. 25 points and a half for the Pistons is the worst half performance since they invented the shot clock, which I think goes back a little bit, Bob.
54-55 season, and it was a 21-0 run to start the second half.
So 21 21 straight points to the Miami Heat, it's really hard to take you seriously, even though I think they're going to end up making the playoffs. You know, now this, you're never your worst game, and you're not necessarily your best game. So I'm not going to label them with that. But in case anyone is listening and wondering, that's all.
Can I ask you guys a question? Because to me, one of the most intriguing teams of this season, especially because of their slow start, is the Oklahoma City Thunder, okay, who are now tied with the Rockets for the third spot in the Western Conference. They have a record of 42-26, came from behind to beat the Nets in the last game, all that stuff. Do you believe that the Thunder, with Westbrook and with Paul George, can be a dangerous out in the playoffs?
Absolutely, I do. I do. And George is back. I mean, he's having a fantastic year. He's making a bid for first team all league. He's making a bid to be in the MVP discussion himself. And the other guy that is there every night, Adams, you know, is a force. Stephen,
Good coach, by the way, really good coach.
No, you keep hearing rumbles about him ready to get out of it and go back to college. By the
really?
Way,
really, I haven't seen that. Where would he? Is there a specific landing place?
No, I don't know for sure. But I just heard. I'll drive if he wants to come to Boston. I'll pick him up at the airport.
Guess what? You know who ought to drive him to Los Angeles? Anybody who's interested in UCLA mattering again in college?
Oh my
basketball.
God! That's an interesting story. Anyway, but Bill, I do. There's some rumble out there about this, but meanwhile, I'm on their bandwagon a little.
What about you, Mitch? What do you think?
If they can play their way, continue to do what they're doing, and play their way up to the number two seed, I'd feel a lot more confident about them. If anyone who's in the 3, 4, 5, 6 in the West is going to have a tough couple of first rounds before you get to the Golden States or Denver, because you're going to have Oklahoma. If you had it right now, you'd have Oklahoma City, Houston, Portland. San Antonio's never an easy out, even though they're not what they used to be. And that's those rounds are going to beat each other up before you get to the elite round in the conference championship. So, you know, if they suddenly somehow can snag the number two seed and they're playing Utah to open.
It's hard, though. They got 4 games to make up in the loss column. It's a lot with 16 left.
You know? So that's why I hesitate. But in terms of pure talent, sure.
So you put it in the category, as we often do so often, somebody you'd just rather not play, somebody, you know, that they're going to be heard from, I think. That's all. No question.
And by the way, before we get to parting shots, just about the Spurs, okay? How about old Pop? There they are. Sitting, you like don't even pay attention to them sometimes, and there they are sitting in the six hole again in the West. And I'm telling you something, I don't believe even the wonkiest NBA fans could name their starting lineup to win valuable prizes.
Did you know there was a quick way you could save money? Switch to Geico.
All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And GEICO offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? GEICO's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. Now, how about homeowners or renters insurance? You bet GEICO's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com. Hey, yeah. Moving on a little bit, before we do the part, we do have to touch about the biggest news story of the day, which is not a sports story, but it is, boy. And it isn't. And that is my observation off the top on this whole college scandal that is engulfing the nation is that, isn't it, it's not nothing funny about it. It's a fact. It's a story of outrage, frankly, for those of us who aren't in the top 1%. But it's amusing to the degree that here's what could potentially be the most amazing, biggest scandal in that touches on athletics in the history of this country, and has nothing to do with the acknowledged corruption of the big time money sports. Uh-huh. Has nothing to do with football and basketball. And you know, and we can moralize about those, and we will, and forever.
It's about who how knew you that get you on could a rowing do team when you
the
don't
water
when
polo.
Well,
and a lot of people are going to go to jail over these things.
And somebody had a piece in the Times today saying, wasn't anybody being a gatekeeper? Oh, we have a 145-pound long snapper in football. You know, nobody's looking at these Photoshop pictures of these fake athletes. This, to me, people who think this country is an inside game, for the rich and powerful. Here it is.
This went over my head, this whole thing, the idea of how this all worked and what these coaches were doing. Of course, well, they were taking bribe money, so I know what they were doing, but it's an astonishing story. I mean,
you wonder if, and from the sports element, this is the only part that's of interest to us, although it's a fascinating national story, but you wonder if some of these crew coaches, some of these volleyball tennis coaches didn't get a little tired of looking over at the football program and the basketball program and the shoe deals that those coaches get and the millions of dollars that those coaches get. And all of a sudden, along comes a guy who's willing to give them $25,000 to $50,000 to $60,000 for just looking the other way or lying about a recruit who you're never going to use. And what difference is it going to make in your big picture scheme of things? Because no one's coming to the school just necessarily for you. Or you don't get tens of thousands of people to come out and watch your team row. And they said to themselves, "To hell with it. I want a piece of this." I don't know. I don't know if that figured into their consciousness. Because of this story, Mike, you're right. It's about the rich and powerful having the money to do this, but it's also about the people at the lower end willing to take it in colleges. And we're always saying, well, what does a football coach really have to do with the university and learning and all the rest? We all know they're basically just professional training factories. Well, we didn't say that about the crew coaches. We didn't say that about the tennis coaches. We said about the teams that generally have kids who are very good academically and who are there for the college experience or well, who are not going to go pro. So this is as much about them and those teams as it is the flip side about, you know, what wealth and power can do
well,
for you.
There's one other aspect to it too, Mitch, though, and that is that at the big schools, at the big schools, these programs, these non-revenue programs, are subsidized by the football and basketball teams' money.
Yeah.
So they have to acknowledge that. You know,
that doesn't stop jealousy.
I'm just saying, I'm just throwing that in there.
Story. Our Carl Hyacin's always saying how hard it is with his great, wacky, brilliant novels to stay ahead of the craziness in Florida. Man, I didn't see this one coming. Really getting gobsmacked. This one actually gobsmacked me.
I had absolutely no idea.
If you got to pay $500,000 to get two kids into USC, just buy yourself a school, okay? Just buy yourself a school.
Another thing, and let me join the chorus here, a lot of people have been pointing out in what we've been reading over the last day or two, is that the whole folly. I have long felt the following, that higher education in America is a racket. It's a racket. Yeah. There's we have allowed this thing to evolve into the idea where you have to go to college and you have to go to certain colleges, and that's bunk. It's not true. It is simply not true, and there's so much more to how you become who you are. are as an adult than that, and that this is going to be exposed. They wanted to go to these quote unquote prestigious colleges, and it just isn't necessary. I hate that, you know, with people. That's all. It isn't necessary.
And here's a parting shot before we get to our parting shots. Okay, and I'm not the only one who's pointed this out, and I've read it and I've watched it on television. For every one of those kids, a deserving kid didn't get in.
Right. That's right. Which is the argument, Mike, which is raging now for those kids to be booted out. And, you know, depending on the corners, there's very, very interesting debates that you hear on different shows. Some people feel sorry for these kids because they're being vilified on social media. I have a hard time feeling sorry for the girl named Jade, you know, the daughter of
Lori Loughlin's daughter, who says she didn't want to go to class anyway.
I didn't want to go to school. Only was going to college for the parties and the game days, and had her 2 million followers on Instagram. It seems to me, why are you sending that kid to college? She's already figured out the business world. She's an Instagram endorser type of thing. That's the new economy. But it is an interesting debate as to whether the kids should pay for the sins of the fathers, so to speak. I guess that debate will go on. But from a sports point of view, I just found it mysterious and weird that you could say someone was coming to your team and recruit them, and then they never play, they never show up, they're not there. How do you bury something like that?
This aspect of it, Mitch, is what I can't grasp it. I would need someone to sit down and explain it to me. I just don't get how that transpired. No,
well, some other time, some other reason. Let's get to our parting shots.
Now, parting shots.
Maybe it's fitting that LeBron James and Tiger Woods do share the same birthday, because it just adds symmetry to their careers, a symmetry that starts with the fact that Tiger was the biggest star in American sports before LeBron was. Tiger, of course, succeeded Michael Jordan. Tiger had 14 majors over a decade ago and wasn't just going to pass Jack Nicklaus. He was going to blow by Jack as if Jack were standing still at 18. You know what happened after that. It was Dan Jenkins who said prophetically that the only things that could stop Tiger were injuries or a bad marriage. Now Tiger's trying to come all the way back at the age of 43 after a bad back that not too long ago required spinal fusion. And he missed Arnold Palmer's tournament last week because of a sore neck. Once he was going to win majors forever. LeBron, he was going to make the finals forever. We saw how that turned out this year. What we're really talking about here is a variation of a line older than both of them. You want to make the sports gods laugh? Tell them about your plans. Or maybe it's just a Yogi line. Sure gets late early around here.
Love that one. Hey, the Washington Nationals signed Tony Sipp yesterday. You may say, who? Now, Tony Sipp is that vanishing species of athlete, an African-American baseball pitcher. But what really matters is that he is a type of pitcher that is supposed to be on his way to being obsolete. He is a loogie. That's an acronym for left-handed one-out guy. Now, unless you've been paying close attention, you may not know that Tony Sipp will be entering his 11th season in the bigs. He has appeared in 580 games for the Indians, Diamondbacks, and Astros, totaling 482 and two-thirds innings. Do the math. He has 7 career saves. He does what he does, face left-handed hitters. The moral of the story is, mama, raise your son to throw left-handed. There is no way a right-handed pitcher would play 10 seasons averaging under an inning pitch per appearance. Just saying.
I'm going to switch hands. Nothing teaches you about the future more than the past. So please, all you draft fanatics who think Kyler Murray or Dwayne Haskins or any other quarterback is a lock for your team's future, consider this small print news item from yesterday. Blake Bortles was released by the Jaguars. Released, not traded, just dropped. Over $16 million in dead money counted against his team, and they still dropped him. Now let's go back 5 years to the 2014 draft. Where was Bortles picked? First round, number 3. At the time, what did they say? Fantastic size, NFL body type, franchise caliber quarterback. Mel Kiper gave the Jaguars an overall A for their draft that year. An A! Bleacher Report was more cautious. They wrote, Bortles is not nearly as ready to step in and play from day one as Teddy Bridgewater is, and he may not have the upside that Johnny Manziel does. Ahem. Both Bridgewater and Manziel are currently looking for jobs. Bridgewater for perhaps his third team, Manziel just a job, period. And now so is Bortles. All this proves is that there is no such thing as a guarantee in drafting a player, and all the pre-draft hype is just a lot of hot air designed to keep TV shows, sports talk radio, and scouting websites in clover year-round. Bortles is Exhibit A in proving you don't know an NFL quarterback until he becomes an NFL quarterback. 5 years ago, his team used a top three pick. 5 years later, he's cut and costing them money. Tell me again how sure you are what Murray and Haskins are going to do. You knew I was going to get a draft thing in there at some point.
I won my bet. Hey, Mike, I won the bet.
Yes, you did, Bob. I will put $20 in your hand next time we see you.
Okay. That will wrap up this edition of Sports Reporters Podcast. Every Monday and Thursday, you can catch us. We will be back then in a few days. Until we see you then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great weekend.